My name is Eduardo Mello. I'm a lead program manager on the Outlook on the Web team in Redmond, and I'm joined by Dave Myers, a colleague of mine, also on the program manager team in Redmond. So this is the agenda we have for today. We want to really focus today on demos, so we don't have a whole lot of slides to go over. We have some slides just to recap at the end what we have shown to you today, but will be mostly demos, and hopefully that will be a good way for you to go back to your office and have a good sense of what we've been doing on Outlook on the web, and maybe even have something to try out as soon as you get back to work. So very demo heavy. We're going to have some time at the end for questions as well. And I would also encourage you to go to our booth at the expo hall if you have anything else that you want to go in more details, or if you want to see a specific demo that we're not able to cover here today. I would encourage you to go there as well. I mentioned demos. So all the demos we're going to be doing today are based on a tenant that we have in production. So it's all real code running on our production servers. There's no smoke mirrors involved. Some of the features are already available to you on Office 365. Some of them are being flighted, so may not be available to you immediately, but they should be coming available in the near future for you if you're on Office 365 already. A lot of times people ask about on-premise. We're not going to be covering on-premise in a lot of details today. However, you should expect that the features that we're going to be showing today should become available in a future on-premise release of Exchange. One more thing that, you know, in particular if you've seen some of the previous Outlook sessions so far at Ignite, you probably have seen this slide. And what it's trying to capture is a big emphasis that we're putting on making sure that all the innovation that we're putting on Outlook, we're putting in such a way that can be available on all the different Outlook endpoints, whether it's desktop Windows, whether it's Mac, mobile, or web. And you see this through the sort of feature table, but also I hope you're going to see this through the demos. All the demos, again, from today will be on Outlook on the web, but you can think of all those features also be available on the other Outlooks, either at the same time or shortly after they become available on Outlook on the web. I just want to do one more thing before I hand off to Dave, which is I want to take a quick picture of you in the audience so that we can send that to the team and for them to get a sense of what we got here at Ignite. So make your best face if you can so that we can send that to Redmond. So one, two, three, ready? One more. All right. So with that, Dave, do you want to show us some demos?
Yep, thanks. Switch the screen. That's seven or eight, one of the two. All right, yep, that's it. So leading into what Eduardo mentioned about the Outlook family and trying to bring consistent experiences across all the different platforms that we have, the first thing you'll notice is the top of the inbox has changed. So where before you saw just inbox in the folder, you now see focused other, which was originally introduced for mobile. Anyone here use focus inbox on mobile, Outlook mobile? All right, great. So you'll start to see this come in both Outlook on the web, at some point on Outlook desktop, Outlook Mac as well. So you have a consistent experience across all your devices. Like Alan mentioned yesterday in our big Outlook demo, this will be replacing Clutter. So we view it as kind of an evolution of Clutter, where before mails were moved into a separate folder, now they're in your inbox, but they just go into another pivot. But it will be the same kind of machine learning, figuring out what you read, what you pay attention to kind of reduce the noise in your main focus inbox. Another nice thing that we've added here is this roll-up that will be kind of, should be towards the top depending on pin items, which we'll go to in a second. This shows how many new mails you have in the other pivot that are unseen. It also gives a roll-up of what are the main senders that they've come from, which you can see here, Zillow, New York Times. If you click on it, it will move you over to the other pivot where you can see all of these mails. A lot of them are updates, newsletters, gray mails that don't necessarily require your attention right away. Another thing we have is, you know, computers don't get things right all the time. So we have the ability to right-click. You can move it back to focused. We also give you the chance to say, I want all of these messages always to land in my focus inbox or just this one conversation. So you can go there. Then navigate back to between the two views just by clicking on the pivots. Going into continuing with our trend of talking about new triage features, I want to show off a few things that we've added over the past year. The first one is pinned items. This has been around for a little bit. I don't know if any of you guys use it. I find it incredibly helpful for messages that I need to follow up on, but they might get pushed down a little bit. I can go in here, click pin, and they're permanently at the top of my list view, which is pretty nice. Make sure I don't miss anything that I need to follow up on later. Another pretty simple but also powerful feature that we've added is the ability to undo some actions in the inbox. So I don't know if you guys are the same way. I sometimes go through my mail very quickly, end up deleting the wrong items. You know, I'm just not really paying attention to where my mouse is, things like that. So now if I delete something, I can go up here to the top right, click undo, and it'll show back up in my list view. That also works for moving items and a few other things like mark as read, unread. The last thing I wanted to demo is something that was first released in our consumer Outlook.com platform that we brought over to the Enterprise Office 365 ecosystem, which is Sweep. So when we set up this demo account, they got added to a bunch of groups, and at the bottom you'll see all these different welcome mails. I haven't had a chance to go through and delete all of them, but I don't really want them in my inbox right now. So what I can do is go up to the top, click Sweep, and there are a few different rules. I can say delete, move. In this case, I'll archive everything. And then I want to say everything from this group administrator, sweep it out. And then it went through, cleaned those out all out of my inbox, go to my archive folder, and I can see them all there. So those are some of the new things that we've brought into the triage world to kind of help you focus better, be more productive. Next, I'll lead into some compose features that we've added. So the first thing you'll see, other than the fact that we've kind of redone the UI a little bit, hopefully to make it easier on your eyes and better to use. When you click on two, you'll now see these suggested contacts. This is pulling out of your recipient cache, seeing who you communicate with the most, and then we kind of give you there so you don't have to type anything if you want to send mail. So I'll click on Garth. Another thing that we have is at mentions. So this is a feature that we shipped and is coming across the different Outlook products. So I can go at, I see suggested contacts again, put it there, and that automatically adds the person to the to line. So just do a quick thing here. Another kind of nice little delight feature that we've added was emoji. So we have search, different things there. You can say, just so it adds a little bit more fun to your emails that you have. So we'll go through and I'll add a picture to the image that we'll send here. So I'm just copying an image off of Bing Search and just copy paste right into the email. I grabbed a very big image, so it'll take a second to load. Some cool things we've done here is giving you the ability to do a lot more formatting and editing on images, which you have in Desktop Outlook. We haven't always had in the web. We're adding that to really allow you to be more powerful even in the web experience. So I can drag here. If I get a little thing, so I can resize it, make it small, flip the image, add a border to it. Make it round, add some shadows to really stand out. There we go. So this is all done in the browser HTML. It's available on most of the browsers. We are constrained by a few things. So Safari has a few of the limitations, but you should be able to use it in most places. So I'll just send that email off and then switch over to Eduardo, who will demo the next piece.
Thanks, David. Let me switch. Well, let's go ahead and take the question.
Yes, that's great feedback. We've heard that before, and we are looking at allowing you to have multiple signatures along with inline images and the signatures and everything. So I know that's on our team's backlog. I'm not sure on the exact priority, but we are looking at that.
And just to add a little bit more to that, so there are sort of signatures is a very interesting space. Lots of different requirements. We already add support for inline images. So you can configure your signature to have inline images in OWA. So that's available now. But we're looking at two more things. One is multiple signatures, which is what you asked for as well. It's in the roadmap. And the other one is we're looking at making signatures roam across the different Outlook clients. So you can imagine at some point in the future be able to configure your signature in OWA, and that signature also works in desktop Outlook or vice versa, but we don't have that one yet. But that's a good question. So switching to my demo machine, something I forgot to mention at the beginning, but David also touched a little bit on that. It's something that we call internally, we call it convergence. And you may have seen it on the news a few times now, but basically what convergence is a big effort that we started a while back to basically bring together the Exchange, Office 365, Outlook on the web experience and the consumer Outlook.com web experience together. We're not quite done with that yet, but we're actually pretty close to the point where all accounts, whether it's Office 365 or consumer, are running on the same stack, on the same servers, whether it's consumer or Office 365. We also did a lot of work to make the UI the same. So, the command bar where you have the new, reply, delete, comments, for example, that is something that we brought over from the Outlook.com UI, and that's something that a lot of people find very useful to have a place where they can always go to for the key operations that they do with email. The other thing that we've done is we did a lot of improvements to what we call single line list view, which is what you see on my screen here. David was using OWA in what we call the three column view, so you have left nav of folders, message list, in reading pane. We call that three column view. This is what we call single line, and that's something that was always available in OWA, but not really something that we spent a lot of time investing on improving. Well, it turns out that for consumers in Outlook.com, that's how most of them have their web experience configured. So as part of conversions, we spend a lot of time making the single line view experience better compared to what it was before. We improve it so much that actually, this is my real view when I use OWA. I don't like the three columns as much. This is how I use OWA in the office. And for me, one of the biggest benefits is allows me to see more messages in one screen. We did this as part of conversions. So what I want to do in my part of the demo is start to show some of the work that we've been doing for the last 18 months or so around attachments and how we're trying to make it easier for knowledge workers to collaborate and work together on documents. So let me open this message here from Sarah. And it looks just like a regular message with a Word document attachment. But there is a little thing different in here, which is this little cloud icon. And what it's basically indicating is this message doesn't have an attachment like we're used to have attachments in messages. What that message has is it has a link to a document that is in OneDrive for Business. So there's no physical attachment on that message. But we did a lot of work to make the experience look very much the same. So end users don't need to know a different way to interact with documents, whether they are attached to the message or just referenced as a link. So same experience, even though the document is not on the message. One of the biggest benefits of having that document on OneDrive for Business is users can collaborate on that document without having to deal with multiple versions of the document, having to merge changes and all that. We're all working on the same instance of that document that is hosted on OneDrive for Business. As a matter of fact, I don't even need to go to a different application to read that document. I can read that document in side by side, so I can have the document and the conversation next to each other in a very integrated way. I can even go one step further, and I can click on this Edit Reply button. And what it will do is it will take that document from a read-only mode and turn it into a read-write mode, so I can make changes directly to it. And because this is demo and no smoke mirrors, there was a little bit of an error. So let me try again. Wi-Fi is working, so that should not be it. OK, that's better. So I should be able to make changes directly to that document, which is, again, on OneDrive for Business, while also making some comments on the email in parallel. So I'll just add Ignite 2016. Document looks good. Hit send. And all within OWA, I was able to review a document, make a few changes, and let Sarah know that I'm done with the document, and she can take it to the next step. So all within OWA without having to switch to a different application. Now, some of you may have seen this before. We actually showed this at the last Ignite. I want to make sure that maybe some of you have not seen this before, so I want to make sure that we all knew about these. What I want to show now is the new things that we have done in the attachment space since last Ignite, and that's something that we're showing here today for the first time. Switch to a different conversation I have, this one, which has multiple participants, and if you expand, you can see that it has attachments over here, it has attachments over here. And you probably have been in conversations like these where multiple people are sending attachments back and forth, and you have to sort of open one message at a time to find the attachment that you're looking for. And again, that can be pretty time consuming. So something that we've done recently to improve that experience is, if you look here at the top right corner, this is what we call the conversation level attachments. So if I click on these, well, before clicking, I get a sense of there are five attachments in that whole conversation, spanning all the different messages of that conversation. But if I click on it, I can see what those attachments are. I don't have to go message by message. And as you might expect, if I open that attachment, it will give the same experience that you saw before, where it opens side by side and navigates to the specific message associated with that attachment. So much easier for you to navigate the different attachments in a long-running conversation. So that's conversation level attachment. Well, let me show one more here that is interesting. So different message also with attachments. What I want to do on this one is I want to reply to this one and add somebody else that I think may have something interesting to say about this this proposal that I'm working on with Alex. So I had one of my colleagues called Sarah Davis. And if that's all I do, Sarah will get the message that I'm sending, but she won't get the attachment that was in the original message from Alex. I would have to either reattach that document or I would have to forward that document separately to Sarah. But now in O, as you may have seen, right after I add Sarah to the to line, there was this little tip that showed up here saying, hey, do you want to include the most recent attachment to this message? We know that the message I'm replying to had an attachment. I add somebody new to the thread, so that person doesn't have access to that attachment. So by clicking here, the attachment was re-added, and I was able to save quite a bit of time, which I would have to spend if I had to take care of that attachment myself. So little things like these, which really help people work on documents together throughout the day. Now, we know that lots of people have attachments that are stored locally on their computers. some users, some organizations rely pretty heavily on OneDrive for Business. We also know that some organizations rely on other cloud storage providers for their documents, whether it's Box, Dropbox, and so on. So we want to make sure that all of these capabilities that we're showing to you today are also available for customers that rely on third-party document providers. So I want to attach something else now. And this is what we call our attachments or file picker, where you can pick files to attach to your messages. And you, as you can see, there is a pretty long list here of places that you can pick files from. OneDrive, that's OneDrive for Business that you probably used to. Group files, this will show the document libraries of all the groups that I'm a member of. We also introduced something new called recent attachments. And what this is this is the list of all attachments that I have worked on in the last few days from all these different sources. So if I'm not sure exactly where the document is, but I know that I worked on it recently, I can just go to recent attachments and I can select it from there. But
you got a question.
Yeah. So the question was, do I need to know which type of HTTP service the recipient has?
FTP.
So we don't rely on FTP, right, for these. It's all using sort of, from a protocol point of view, we rely on HTTP. But one thing that we do is when we send these documents, depending on who the provider is, we actually make sure that the recipients have access to them from a permissioning point of view. So the question is, the recipient has to have access. Has to have access from a connectivity point of view. Yes. Whether the document is on OneDrive or Dropbox or someone, the recipient has to be able to connect or to ping.
Exactly.
But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the point is, do they have to have an account in Google Drive or Box or Dropbox? And that kind of just depends on the different providers. So some will give you an anonymous access link where you don't have to sign in. Other providers will require that the user has an account and will do direct ACL permissioning.
I didn't follow. Yes. So I think I understood the question. So one thing that you can also do, if you're worried about will the recipient have access to the document, and I'll show this in a second, is you can actually select the file from one of these locations and send it as a classic attachment. In that case, you can also guarantee that the end user will have access to the document. And I'll show this in a little bit. So the other thing that you may have seen here is I have Dropbox, Box, Google Drive, and Facebook. I already have Box configured. As a matter of fact, let me select this file here, which will look familiar for you in a little bit. So this is connecting to Dropbox. in real time and getting the list of files that I have on my Dropbox account. And after I select it, I have these two options. I can, one, just create a reference, what we call modern attachment, which is basically a link to that document on Dropbox. And it will be, the link will be such that whoever receives that email, we're going to grant permission to those users to open that document on Dropbox. Or I can just attach as a copy, which in this case will basically download that file. We're downloading it now from Dropbox and including that message as a classic attachment, which is what we have here. I'll go one step further, and since it's an inline image, or since it's an image, I'll move it to the message body to make it an inline image. And I think some of you may recognize that photo from about 20 minutes ago. So basically what happened was, took the photo here, I had this connected to Dropbox, so it sunk the file automatically to my Dropbox account. And then, because I also have it configured here, I was able to access that image in a very simple way. So everybody likes a photo. Can I send it? All right, so picture sent. So that was attachments. So that's all the work that we've been doing for the last year and a half on attachments. Now, let's talk about, question.
What happens when you send a document out to multiple people? The versioning is happening behind the scenes, or do we need to worry about it? There are two people making an update to the document at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, so the question is, what happens when we send these documents to multiple users and they're all working on it at the same time? How does versioning work and all that? The answer depends on a few different things. One is where the document is located and which versioning capabilities are provided based on that location. For example, OneDrive for Business has a number of versioning capabilities. So that's what you're going to get, whatever those capabilities are. Dropbox, Box, and so on have a different set of versioning and co-authoring capabilities. So that will vary based on the provider of the document, if you will. But that's what people get.
Let's say that you attach a link to a OneDrive
yes.
within the corporation.
Yes.
What happens when two people are making changes to the same document?
They'll be making changes at the same time on the document.
You know, I see your changes while
I'm yes. mine. They may, again, depending on which, also on which client they're using. For example, if they're using Word or Word Online, yeah. There is actually hints in the UI of Word and Word Online that shows who is working on which paragraph, who is working on which section. And all that work is work that it's not like OWA specific. It's work from the Word team, the PowerPoint team, the Excel team. And they're working a lot on making co-authoring better and better. And that's we just sort of get that for free. That's a very good question. Another question that sometimes I get is, in particular with this third party, cloud providers is, can I disable that as an admin? And the answer is yes, you can disable any cloud provider that you want if that's the thing that you choose to do for your organization. Okay, so let's talk about something else, which is what we call, in the team we call it tailored experiences or TXP. And let me explain that through an example. So we have this email here, let me scroll down a little bit. It's from Southwest, it's some upcoming flight reservation that I have. And you've all seen emails like this before. They have lots of content. Most of it is frankly not that useful, but there are a few nuggets of information there that are really, really important to you, like departure time, confirmation code, seat assignment. And it can be a little bit hard sometimes to find that information. So what we've done to simplify that is when that message gets delivered to Office 365, we extract all the key information, and we basically create what we call cards. So in this case, that Southwest email has two flight segments, I guess from Cleveland to St. Louis and back to Cleveland. And we extract all that information. It's very easy for you to see when the flight leaves, my reservation code, and you can even check in directly from here. You click on that check-in link, takes you directly to the Southwest check-in page from where you can check it in. So we did that for Southwest and many other airlines, but we know that you may not be getting emails directly from these airlines. It may be from some travel agency that you use. For example, Concur, same experience, different email with different sort of format and level of details, but same card experience for Concur travel itinerary. We've also done something similar to that for packages that you're expecting to be delivered. So this is an email from Amazon about some vacuum cleaner that I bought. And similar experience where I can see the order number, I can see when it's expected to be delivered. And if I really want to track that package delivery in real time, I can click on that link. It will take me to the Amazon page in this case, and I can see in real time, you know, where the package is. Going back to the flight, it's great to have these here. So now it's easy for me to know my confirmation code and all these. But I also know that if I'm going to be traveling, I won't be able to be in the office or have meetings or something like these. So we went one step further, and we actually put those flights in my calendar. So I can open this, for example, here, and it will show me essentially a meeting request or an appointment that was automatically created and put in my calendar, blocking that time for my flight to, in this case, to San Francisco. And then we went one step further, and we will send you an email 24 hours before the flight time so that you can check in. And we'll also send you a reminder 3 hours in advance so that you can make sure that you're leaving in time to go to the airport. And all that was done automatically when that message got delivered to my mailbox. Sorry, repeat again. So the question was, if Southwest updates the flight for whatever reason, will that create a second event, or will it update the event that already exists? So it depends. We're working to make sure that we're able to recognize these updates and update the corresponding event in the calendar correctly. We don't do it all the time, so in some cases you may end up with duplications. But that's a very good question. And of course, we're working to make sure that updates gets more seamless. Same with cancellations. We don't remove from your calendar automatically if the flight gets canceled for whatever reason. Okay, so with these, we started to talk a little bit about calendar integration as well. And we know that one of the things that's very valuable and very powerful about Outlook is how it brings mail and calendar together in one single experience. So what I want to show now is some of the work that we've been doing to improve calendar experiences in OWA. So some of you may have noticed here at the bottom left corner that we now have what we call module switcher. It is a control that allows you to switch between mail, calendar, people, tasks, and back to email. Not the most exciting demo, I'll give you that, but a lot of people give thumbs up when they see this because it makes it very easy for you to go back and forth. And it's something that if users are familiar with other versions of Outlook and they come to OWA, they come to expect a module switcher at the bottom left corner. Now they have it. Not very exciting, but really, really powerful. Now, some of you may have noticed that I have this thing here on the top of my list view that says what's next. We call this feature up next. And the idea is, even though we like that ability to quickly go between mail and calendar, you should not have to go to calendar just to know what your next meeting is. It's still, it's a context switching if you have to go between the two modules. And if it's something as simple as what my next meeting is, you should not need to do that. So that's what up next tells you. So it looks like after I'm done with this session, I have to do booth duty, and it's in about 25 minutes, if you see on the right side. So I know I have some time before this session is done. I have some time maybe to go get some coffee or something like this, and then I can go to do my booth duty, all from within mail. As a matter of fact, I wonder what I have after booth duty. I'm sure I have something else to do after that. I don't need to go to calendar to know what I have to do next. I can just click here on agenda, and now I have a full view of what the rest of my day looks like, and even a little peek into tomorrow. So booth duty is next. And it looks like after that, at noon, I have lunch somewhere with beer, so that sounds good. I definitely want to be in that meeting. But there's a company meeting that I need to do at 12:30, so that's going to be a bit of a problem. I need to decide between these two. It's an online meeting. You know what? Let's just cancel that. Important conflict. We'll need to cancel today's meeting. Cheers. All right, no conflict anymore. I can enjoy my lunch. And I was able to do all that within mail. Didn't have to go to a calendar for that. So that will be a very, very good beer. The question was, do I need to be in this view, single line list view, in order to see that? That was not part of the demo, but I will include it just for you. And the answer is no. You do not need to be on that view. So of course, we have to make it a little smaller, because now I'm in three columns as opposed to single line. But everything that I showed to you today is available in that three-column view. Everything that they've showed in three-column view is available in single line. As a matter of fact, it's also available in your consumer accounts as well. That's the beauty of conversions, is most of these features will be available to all views for Office 365 users as well as consumers. OK, so I've given you sort of multiple demos about calendar without having to go to calendar. So I think I should go to calendar now. So calendar, we've seen this before. I have my meetings. But it looks like I also have this interesting thing in my calendar. The Braves are playing Phillies tonight at Turner Field, so you know, a few miles from here, I guess. If I switch my calendar view to a week view, I get to get all my local team games in view, which is kind of cool, right? In particular for you sports fans. And this is all based on a feature that we also released recently called Interesting Calendars. And what it is basically we are curating calendars for popular events. We started with sports, as you might imagine. But we're going to add, you know, TV schedule and other events that may be of interest. And we allow you to import those calendars into your Outlook mailbox. So I have college football here, and I have baseball. So I'm going to add the Atlanta Falcons calendar as well. So add calendar, interesting calendar. And Bing is the one that's curating all that information. So sports, football, NFL, Falcons. And now it's added. I can close it. So not only I can see the events, I can actually see after the games are over, I can actually see the scores. Looks like the Falcons won against the Saints. So that's, I guess that's good if you're a Falcons fan. And if I go to next week, looks like they're playing Carolina at Carolina, so that may be a little tough. But you can see all that coming in to your Outlook calendar. So that was Interesting Calendars. And one more demo I want to show you is the work that we've been doing to improve how you view people-related information in Outlook. So I clicked on Bonnie, and I see what we call the people pane on the right side that has some of the information that you expect to see on a people card, like Bonnie's job title, her phone number, her office location. But we're also augmenting that with more dynamic, sort of real-time information. So I can see, for example, where Bonnie sits in the org chart. I can see recent emails that I have exchanged with Bonnie, as well as recent attachments that I have exchanged with her. And last but not least, I can see upcoming and past meetings that I've had with Bonnie. So if it's something that, you know, maybe I'm not very familiar with, but I know I have interacted with that person in the past, that can be a really good way to give me some context about who that person is. Or if somebody that I want to talk to about some topic, and I know I have some meeting coming up soon, but I'm not exactly sure when that meeting is, that can also be a very handy way for me to know, oh, I have a meeting with Bonnie tomorrow, so instead of sending her an email today, I'll just wait and talk to her about, you know, whatever when I see her tomorrow. So that's some of the work we've been doing with people. With that, do you want to continue, Dave? Let me switch back to 5. So the question was, what's the timeline that we use to show there? For example, if my next meeting with somebody is 6 months from now, do we show it there? I'm not sure about that, but we can follow up later if you're interested. But I'm not sure exactly how far back and how far forward we look at. Yeah, so the question was, is there a way to disable interesting calendars? I believe there is. I'm not exactly sure, but I believe there is. One thing that we've been doing as a sort of rule of thumb with a lot of these features is to give admins the ability to switch or control how it gets exposed. I know for a fact that, again, the document providers, we have controls for that. I think we have for interesting calendars, but I'm not 100% sure.
Thanks. So here are a couple slides on the recap. We won't really go through them, but these are online. If you want to go back later, grab some screenshots, share them out with other people. So we did triage, compose, we did the attachments to the document providers that Eduardo just talked about, and then a lot of the things around the other experiences outside of, you know, the core inbox. So tailored experiences, calendar, people, where you were able to see the different documents and things like that related to it. Running close on time, so we just wanted to thank everyone for coming, especially so early in the morning. And then, yep, we'll get to questions in a sec. Please rate us. Hopefully you enjoyed the talk. If there's something that you didn't get that you were looking for, let us know. We'll make sure that we can include it in the future. And then finally, there are a bunch of other related Outlook sessions. I encourage you guys to take a look. Even outside of Outlook, there are other things in the 365 Exchange world that you can also check out. One example is the new connectors that we're bringing in, so integrating with a lot of other third-party services. So, yes, questions? Yes, so a lot of... So the question was, are any of these features going to show up in Outlook Web for Exchange 2016? A lot of these will. They will probably need to wait until one of the next CUs, since the typical release pattern is we first go to the service, Office 365, work out any things we might need to tweak, and then we release it in a follow-up CU to on-prem. So these will land in 2016 at some point. I don't have it off the top of my head. If there's something in particular, we can follow up and figure out when for you. Yeah.
Right,
yeah. Yeah.
Are there keyboard shortcuts in the OWASP? You know, while you're looking at the mail, if you want to look at the next one,
yeah.
Archive it.
So the question was about shortcuts. I'm glad that you asked that question. Let me switch back to my machine. So yes, so there are a lot of shortcuts about things that you can do to navigate through OWA. It's hard to memorize every one of them, so you only need to memorize one. Question mark. Hold on. If it works. It is not working for whatever reason here. There you go. So if you click a message on the message list and then you enter a question mark on the keyboard, it gives you all the keyboards shortcuts that we have available. So you can sort of memorize whichever ones you want. As a matter of fact, we have one more thing, which is at the bottom you see to change, go to settings. If you click on it, goes to an options page where you can choose which set of shortcuts you want to use. One of the options is Gmail. Basically what we did was we took a look at all the Gmail shortcuts and we implemented them in OWA. So if you happen to be a Gmail user, outside work, and you're really familiar with the Gmail shortcuts, guess what? You don't need to learn a new set of shortcuts anymore. You can configure OWA to use Gmail shortcuts. You change that, you go back to that screen. So this is the settings page. You change that, you go back to that question mark page. The shortcuts that you see at that point are the Gmail shortcuts. So that's what we do there. I'll go there, and then I'll come back here.
Can you show a little bit about Skype integration out of the web?
Yeah. Yeah. So the question was, can we show a little bit of Skype integration? Do you want to show? Or you want to talk to it?
Yeah. So we do have Skype integrated. As you can see there, you can always access it from the top here. Then you can go there, start a conversation. You can see your contacts, your full contact list. Sorry. And then you can also access it directly from the people pane that we showed. You just click there, and that's actually the account, so that won't work. But do this to hover. You can go there. You'll get notifications. You can also get the voice and video chat with Skype. I think that requires a plugin in most browsers, but that is available. You'll get notifications that pop down. So it is fully integrated. Presence is there as well.
Yeah, and you can also schedule Skype meetings when you're scheduling a meeting, and you can also join Skype meetings that are in your calendar all through OWA. I think we need to get off the stage to let the next presenters come in, but we'll be hanging out here for more questions if you have. You can also go to the booth at the Expo Hall, and we'll be happy to take more questions there. Thanks again for coming, and enjoy the rest of Ignite.